Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Bill Plake, who's an Alexander Technique teacher in South Pasadena in the Los Angeles area. In addition to being an Alexander teacher, Bill is also an acclaimed musician, and more to the point of our conversation today, he's been a competitive athlete, cycling and triathlon, and he's also a certified personal trainer. And we're going to talk today about the general topic, fitness, exercise, and the Alexander Technique. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being on the show. This is our second interview. Could you begin by giving our listeners a short description of the Alexander Technique?
Yeah, sure. I tend to look at the Alexander Technique as a method of self-care that teaches you how to become aware of and prevent unnecessary and sometimes harmful muscular tension as you go about your activities. It's something that promotes ease and efficiency of movement, enhanced balance and coordination, improved vocal and respiratory function, and probably most important, a more reliable sensory perception. In other words, you really get a better sense, a more accurate sense of what you're doing versus what you think you're doing.
Right. And, you know, the word fitness is bandied about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if your concept of fitness might be a little different from what most people think of as fitness based on your Alexander background.
Yeah, I think that it is. And first I'd say that there's, you know, you can ask 100 different people about what the definition of fitness is, from expert to novice, and you'll get different answers. The way I tend to think about or define fitness is, it's having all the components of fitness necessary to meet the physical demands of daily life in such a way as to remain healthy and satisfied. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, and but I think for a lot of people, fitness has been conflated with either muscle strength,
mm-hmm.
or in some cases, cardiovascular capacity, mm-hmm. cardio training, mm-hmm. Perhaps sometimes flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And those can all be very useful things to develop, but from my perspective, and I'm suspecting from yours as well, there's something a bit missing if you focus just on one or more of those. And could you say a little bit about, from what your perspective, what does the Alexander Technique bring to the equation that might be missing in most fitness or training regimes?
Okay, so let me just back up a little bit, and because you mentioned a few of what I would call the components of fitness. You mentioned flexibility and endurance.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other components of fitness are balance and stability,
mm-hmm.
Strength, mm-hmm. including core strength, and agility. Mm-hmm. That is the ability to make controlled quick movements. And then finally, power, which is simply the ability to make accelerating movements. So without trying to get too technical with that, those are basically all the components of fitness. And what people tend to do when they approach a fitness program is they tend to overemphasize one aspect of that. Either they go completely for strength, or they go completely for endurance, or in cardio capacity. And so a well-balanced integrated program is something that combines all of these components together. That's really what makes you ultimately fit. And I think the Alexander Technique, no matter how you're going to approach fitness, helps mostly, I would say, in two ways. The first is it improves the quality of movement, which not only helps you to avoid injury, but also it's going to optimize whatever fitness adaptations you're going for. I tend to look at exercise in the simplest sense if I gave it a simple definition of exercise is basically movement with resistance. So therefore, the quality and variety of movements you utilize when exercising, I would say, are directly proportional to the benefits, that is, the increase in fitness you receive from exercising. So through the Alexander technique, we learn to make movements that are more optimal for the desired fitness outcomes. That is, in fitness parlance, we might say we learn to move with good form. So that's one way I think the Alexander technique can help in fitness. And the other is, and this is a bit of an Alexander slang thing, it's coming from him, but it sort of helps you, what Alexander would say, stay in touch with your reasoning, so that you're always making good choices about how and when to exercise, as well as when to rest, or sometimes when to even avoid exercise. An important concept in fitness that a lot of people don't understand is that when you're actually doing the work, for example, if you're training with weights or you're doing the running and all that, at that exact moment of doing the work, you're actually not making yourself stronger at all. You're weakening yourself. You're sort of tearing yourself down slightly. And it's the rest that is the thing that builds you up. So very often what happens with people when they get injury and undesired results and things like this is they don't take in the component of rest. They don't take rest seriously enough. And they don't take, you know, they just don't put this into the picture. So I found with myself and with my different Alexander students whom I've trained through in personal fitness, one of the biggest things that really changes with them is they really do learn to understand and listen to their bodies. I know that's kind of a cliche thing to say, but they really do listen to their bodies, know when to stop, know when to back off, know when to rest, know when to alter what they do. And because of that, again, not only do they avoid injury and avoid, you know, chronic fatigue and illness and things like that, but they actually optimize or actually get greater results than had they not paid attention to that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think somewhat related to what you've just talked about is what I see as a quality versus quantity issue.
Exactly.
That an awful lot of fitness programs really emphasize quantity, how many miles you run,
exactly,
how many laps you swim, how much weight you lift, that sort of thing.
Right.
And without being particularly interested in how you're utilizing your own, for want of a better word, machine, of machinery,
exactly,
as you do those things.
Right.
And for example, if I see this, I think the most easy place to see this distinction would be, from my perspective, is looking at runners and joggers.
Yes.
If you look at a group of runners and just look at their shoulders and their necks and the facial expression, it's clear that a lot of them are kind of uncomfortable as they run. They don't look real happy. And
yes,
you see shoulders hunched up. You often see their heads compressed back and down onto their spine. And from an Alexander technique perspective, yes, they are they're exercising. They're getting probably some cardio benefit. They're certainly losing weight if that's what they're after, but they're also doing some harm to their own bodies. And I think that's where the technique can really come in, that it helps you to do whatever you do, whether it's exercise or cooking or anything, with better use of yourself, better, more efficient functioning. Would you agree with all that, and do you want to add anything to it? Or
yeah, of course, 100% I would agree with that. And it's interesting you talk about running. There's certain kind of popular exercises that are so dominant in one area, and for example, running, which is mostly the only benefit from running is a cardiovascular benefit. It doesn't do anything to increase core strength, balance, none of these other components.
Right.
And as these people, as you so rightly notice, these people that are doing it, often they're getting the increase in cardiovascular endurance, but as you mentioned, it in my opinion, a rather high price. And that high price is eventually usually damage to themselves, you know, damage to joints, and not only damage to themselves in terms of injury, but an actual change in their coordination. When I teach classes in the Alexander technique in the community, it's not uncommon now that I get a lot of middle-aged runners that come into the class, and they've been running seriously for about 20 years. Mm-hmm. And their coordination is just really horrible. I mean, even mm-hmm. compared to another person their age. And what you can see is that they bring all these bad running habits into everything. And as you mentioned, right. pulling the head back on the spine. And ironically enough, what they tend to do is they actually tend to, when they run, pull their head in the opposite direction they're actually going. Even though, you know, they're going forward in space, but they're mm-hmm. they're tightening their neck and pulling their head backwards.
Right.
And so when I can help them, even with a little thing like that, to get them to sort of use their mechanisms, use their body with a better sense of how their the structure of their body and how that structure works best with respect to gravity, things really change. And I'm thinking of one recently. One of my students in the class in the community I teach has been running marathons for the last 20 years and 10Ks, and always comes in about the same time. Well, she was so thrilled. She's a 48-year-old woman. Just from helping her with the run, helping her to stop some of her compressive habits of lifting her shoulders and pulling her head back and do all these other things, she was so thrilled to say that she had her personal best in a marathon by 48 minutes. She ran 48 minutes faster than she had 4 months before with no difference in training. She says the only difference is what she learned through the Alexander technique, which was to with the risk of getting into our Alexander jargon, following her head, letting her head lead and her body follow that
and,
movement.
And letting her neck be free.
Absolutely.
Because as you say, when you're compressing yourself and going into running, there's a part of you that's actually going a little bit back with each footfall, and you have to overcome that to see.
Yes.
So there's a lot of energy. A certain percentage of your energy output is going into fighting what the rest of your energy is attempting to do, and that sets up, as you say, some pretty harmful patterns of movement that then carry over into other activities. I think Alexander, I think it was Alexander who first made this observation, but I might be wrong about that. Certainly it's an Alexander technique observation, that most people, when they take an activity as sort of a normal level of activity and then increase it, there's a great temptation for them to create, in addition to the extra actual energy they might need, a more harmful, interfering kind of tension.
Yes.
And actually, now that I think about it, of course, Alexander's original issue was a voice issue, and he didn't have any problems just talking to people, but when he got on stage and tried to get his voice to the back of the hall, he created all of these harmful, interfering habits, sort of the exaggeration of his normal speaking. And I think it's the same thing with runners. You look at them walking, they're often, you'll see the same habits, but in a muted form. Mm-hmm. But as you say, if you do a lot of running and you're doing it badly, that then is going to shift back to your ordinary activities, those habits.
So, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And do you want to maybe give an example from a different sport? Running to me is so obvious, but I wonder if there's some other sport that you've had experience with working with people where the same sort of issue comes into play.
Well, certainly cycling, because that's another sport I've been involved in.
Oh, and, sure, yeah.
And what cyclists tend to do, in fact, if you want to see some really poor use of the body in cycling, watch the 7-time Tour de France winner Lance Armstrong when he rode his bike. I mean, he basically lost sight of his hip joints and was, coming forward from the middle of his body, kind of humping the middle of his back up and pulling his neck back. And so cycling is another sport where you have, people doing all kinds of strenuous and terrible things. I do a lot of work when I train people in something that I call integrated functional training. And so we're working with things like medicine balls and light weights and things like this. And when I watch many people lift weights, I see all kinds of terrible things that they do. And you know, you mentioned something really key, because this isn't just in running. Even in weightlifting, we know the idea of weightlifting is we're going to pick up resistance, right? So mm-hmm. here we are, we're going to have this resistance, and we're going to use this resistance to get stronger. But often the form and the effort that people bring into this is far greater than what's really required. And it's almost as if they're falsely anticipating more effort than is necessary. In other words, it's like they're trying to make it, I've got to feel like I'm about ready to bust the vein out of my head, or I'm not even doing something right, you know.
So they're confusing a feeling, which they associate with exerting a certain amount of effort,
right,
with the actual, with the effort itself, in a funny way. I mean,
yes,
they're going for the feeling rather than for the reality of what they want. And I think that's exactly the kind of thing that an Alexander teacher can show someone very quickly and efficiently,
yes,
to distinguish those two things. Yeah.
Yeah, and especially, as you mentioned, in any activity, and especially an activity that the potential client or student thinks is going to be very strenuous, you know.
Right.
You know, you see people bracing to pick heavy things up
before they've even picked it up.
Oh, yeah. And they have, mm-hmm. it's a preconception of what they think they need to do versus really letting, what I'd like to tell my clients is let the task inform you. You know,
yes,
the weight of this thing is going to inform your organism and inform your body what to do, as opposed to you getting this incredible, tense, tight anticipatory thing going on before you start.
And that anticipatory tension actually makes it very difficult for you to sense the actual, if it's a weight, how much it, you know,
yep,
how much work you need to do to press that weight. It interferes with your ability to be sensitive to what's going on.
It does. It absolutely does. And the thing is, when you're lifting weights, this is one thing that people don't keep in mind who train with weights. When you're lifting weights, you have balance issues because you're taking weight away from your body in different planes, sometimes in front of you, sometimes out to the side. And if you are absolutely locked down in anticipation of effort, you don't allow for the natural balance and counterbalance that your body's going to make to respond to those movements of the weight. And when this happens very often, this is very often the thing that precedes injury. Because when we don't right. allow our body to respond to that shift in weight and that counterbalance, this is what we very often do is put it way down there in the bottom of the pelvis and way down there in the lower back, and we lock that thing up, and then there's nowhere for that to go. And then bing, we get the little back tweak.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And just to cite an example from a very different kind of sport, my own experience is with swimming a fair amount. I'm not an especially good swimmer, but I do swim regularly, and I know just from self-experimenting in the pool that when I'm paying attention to my head-neck-torso relationship, it makes a huge difference in my speed, in my endurance, in my ability to swim underwater for longer periods of time. I mean, I can run the experiment anytime I want when I'm in the pool. Just swim versus swim with some Alexander attention, and the difference is always pretty striking to me.
It is.
So I'm wondering, we're kind of coming to a point where we probably should end the conversation. I wonder if you know, the Alexander technique, it has a reputation for being a fairly subtle method. It asks students to make pretty subtle changes in their self-organization. And I think a lot of athletes might think, well, you know, that might be useful for performers. Many musicians and actors and dancers use the technique. But I don't really see it being for me who's doing these very vigorous, tough activities.
Mm-hmm.
Could you say anything that might encourage them to at least give the technique a try?
Well, yeah, the And this is also actually one of the things that's beginning to change in elite athletes is they're really finally beginning to understand that the quality of movement is something that needs to be addressed. And so probably what I'd say to that is for these athletes that think that it's too subtle for them is that, as you mentioned, this head-neck-back relationship, this is everything for our coordination. And something that may seem subtle at first will manifest itself as something that's not at all subtle in terms of how it will change the quality of performance. So I would suggest that if you're an athlete and you're a little reluctant about the usefulness and the potential fact that this might seem too subtle, to really give it a chance. And you can, and many times, see immediately, particularly if you're in the hands of a skilled Alexander technique teacher, you can see in a moment how much better you can move and how much easier you can move. And because of that, if we go back to this idea that strength and coordination are inseparably linked, if you want to become stronger, you increase your coordination, you improve your coordination, you can see in a moment by how making this activity seem lighter by using your head, neck, and back better, that not only does it feel more fluid, not only does it seem more fluid because it is more fluid, but you'll notice probably even that you have more control and power and a greater capacity to develop your skills from that point because of this change.
Yeah, I would agree with that totally. I think, as you say, in the hands of a good Alexander teacher, you're likely to sense the things that we've been talking about pretty quickly.
Immediately
in many cases. Sometimes the process itself might seem a little confusing at first because the technique is, after all, a very different way of thinking about movement than most of us are used to. But yeah, definitely if you're an athlete or you're in a fitness program, and you have any sense that maybe there's some risk of injury there for you, or maybe you just have that feeling that you could be doing these exercises a little more efficiently, I would definitely check out the Alexander technique. So maybe this would be a good place to end, unless there's something else that we haven't touched on.
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
Okay. Well, you know, my guest today has been Bill Plake, who's a teacher, Alexander Technique teacher in South Pasadena, L.A. If you're in the L.A. area and what we've been talking about appeals to you, we'll put a link to Bill's website by the interview, and you might want to contact him. And if you live anywhere else in the world, we'll put a link to a website where you can find a teacher, an Alexander Technique teacher in your area. Bill, thanks so much for being on the show today.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.